Welcome to Base by Base.
Hello.
Today, we're doing something a bit different. Instead of pulling from lots of sources, we're really going to focus our entire exploration deep into just one significant scientific paper.
That's right. We'll walk through it together, kind of following the researcher's journey.
Exactly. From their initial question, the methods they used, what they found, and, you know, what it all actually means.
Think of it like a guided tour, basically, through this one specific study. The paper is called Biallelic Variants in POPDC2 Cause an Autosomal Recessive Syndrome Presenting with Cardiac Conduction Defects and Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy.
It's a really important study from Mikhail Nicastro and colleagues. It came out earlier this year, 2025, in the American Journal of Human Genetics.
And the core issue they tackled is, well, it's crucial in cardiology and genetics. You have these situations where young people develop serious problems with their heart's electrical signals.
Right, the conduction defects where things aren't firing correctly.
Exactly. And sometimes they also have this thickening of the heart muscle, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. But when doctors look for the usual genetic suspects, they find nothing.
So the question is, what is causing it?
Mm-hmm.
And this is relevant for you, the listener, because understanding these underlying causes, well, it can directly impact how these conditions are diagnosed.
And how families get genetic counseling, maybe even pointing towards future treatment.
So let's start where the paper does the introduction, setting the stage.
Okay. So the researchers begin with the basics, reminding us about the heart's electrical system. You know, starts in the sinus node.
Then down through the AV node.
Right, and then spreads out through these special fibers, making sure the heartbeat is coordinated.
And when that system goes wrong, you get these cardiac conduction defects, CCDs. Which can be really serious, especially if they pop up early in life.
Yeah, the paper stresses that early onset CCDs really make you think about a genetic cause. They list some known genes like SCN5A or HCN4, things like that.
But even with those known culprits, a lot of cases, especially the early ones, remain unexplained. It's a real gap.
Definitely a clinical challenge.
So then they bring in the POPDC genes. These are proteins found in the cell membrane. And they mention that we already know issues with POPDC1, specifically getting two altered copies.
Biallelic variants, yes.
Those are linked to a known syndrome involving muscle problems and AV block, a type of CCD.
Right. And previous work, especially in animals, hinted that POPDC2, which is a related gene, is probably involved in heart function too.
What did those studies show?
Well, mice without POPDC2 had slow heart rates, sinus bradycardia, especially under stress. And in zebrafish, reducing POPDC2 led to AV block.
Okay, so the animal models line up with heart rhythm issues.
And importantly, lab studies show the POPDC2 protein actually interacts with these potassium channels called TOK-1. And when POPDC2 is there, it increases the electrical current through TTRK1.
That seems key. So that background really sets up the objective for this specific paper.
Exactly. They aim to provide solid evidence that inheriting two non-working copies, these biallelic loss-of-function variants in POPDC2, causes a new distinct syndrome.
An autosomal recessive one.
Yes. Characterized by sinus node problems, AV conduction defects, and potentially that thickened heart muscle, the hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM.
So could POPDC2 be the missing piece for these specific heart problems? That's the question.
Which brings us to the methods. How did they actually go about finding the answers? It's quite a toolkit.
Right. First, they had to find the affected individuals. They started with families that had these early onset heart problems, but no known genetic cause.
And they mentioned one key initial family where the parents were related, consanguineous.
Which increases the odds of finding recessive conditions, right?
Precisely. They used exome sequencing on this family, looking at the protein coding genes to hunt for candidates.
And
then they broadened the search. They used resources like GeneMatcher to connect with other researchers globally who might have patients with similar unexplained heart issues and maybe even variants in the same gene, POPDC2.
All while handling the patient data carefully, of course.
Yes. Privacy was key. Then, to figure out how the gene changes might break the protein, they used computational modeling.
because there wasn't an actual lab-determined structure for POPDC2.
Correct. So they used tools like AlphaFold 2 to predict its 3D shape.
Which is critical because shape determines function.
Exactly. And they used other tools to predict how the specific variants they found might mess up that structure or maybe affect how it binds to an important signaling molecule called CAMP.
These predictions help narrow down which variants are most likely the real troublemakers.
Mm-hmm. They also needed to know where POPDC2 is normally active in the heart. Is it even expressed in the right places?
How do they check that? Sounds tricky.
They use some really sophisticated techniques, things like single nucleus RNA sequencing, snRNA-seq, and also spatial gene expression mapping, using data from the Human Heart Cell Atlas.
Wow. So that lets them see, cell by cell, which genes are turned on where?
Pretty much. They could map out where POPDC1, POPDC2, and POPDC3 are expressed in different parts of the human heart, focusing on the conduction system, the sinus node, AV node, the bundle branches, those key areas.
And they compared with mouse data, too?
Yes, for contests.
Okay, models, expression maps. What about testing the function directly?
For that, they went to the lab bench, using cells grown in a dish and a technique called patch clamp electrophysiology.
Ah, so they can measure the actual electrical currents?
Exactly. Yeah. Tiny currents flowing through ion channels like TRK1. The main goal was to see if the mutant POPDC2 proteins, when put in the cells together with TRK1, failed to give that boost to the TRK1 current that the normal POPDC2 protein does.
Comparing normal versus mutant function.
Right, and they also checked if POPDC2 had any effect on other important heart channels like sodium channels.
Then they took it another step with computer simulations.
Yeah, mathematical models of human heart cells, specifically pacemaker cells from the sinus node and also atrial cells.
What's the idea there?
To plug in their experimental findings, like, okay, the lab shows mutant POPDC2 reduces TRK1 current by X amount. Then the simulation predicts what effect that should have on the cell's electrical behavior, its rhythm.
Trying to bridge from the channel level to the cell level?
Exactly. And finally, a really crucial part, looking at huge populations.
Biobanks.
Yes, genetic and health data from over 1 million people, Decode Genetics, UK Biobank, Danish cohorts, others.
What were they looking for there?
They wanted to see if carriers, people with just one copy of these rare POPDC2 variants, showed any signs of heart disease. You know, do they have higher rates of AV block or bradycardia or HCM compared to people without the variants?
So assessing the risk for people who aren't homozygous or compound heterozygous.
Right. Using statistical tests to look for associations. It's a really comprehensive approach. Genetics, structure, function, simulation, population data.
Okay, let's dive into the results then. What did all this actually uncover?
Well, the headline finding was identifying those biallelic POPDC2 variants in 6 people from 4 families. Either homozygous, same variant from both parents, or compound heterozygous, 2 different variants.
And these variants were rare.
Incredibly rare in the big population databases like NOMED. And critically, they found 0 individuals in over 730,000 screened genomes who were homozygous for these specific variants.
Which strongly suggests they're pathogenic, not just normal variation.
Exactly. And the clinical picture for these 6 individuals was strikingly consistent.
What did they see?
All 6 had AV conduction disease, mostly first or second degree block. 4 of the 6 also had sinus node problems, like slow heart rate or pauses.
Serious issues.
Very. 2 actually experienced cardiac arrest, and significantly, 2 of the 6 were diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, that heart muscle thickening.
So it matches the syndrome title perfectly.
It does. And because of these problems, 5 out of 6 needed pacemakers, implanted pretty young, between 15 and 23 years old. 2 also got ICDs, implantable defibrillators.
And what about muscle disease, since POPDC1 is linked to that?
That's a key differentiator. The paper emphasizes the absence of significant muscular dystrophy symptoms. Muscle biopsies showed only mild changes in 1 case. So this really looks like a distinct, primarily cardiac syndrome, unlike the POPDC1 or POPDC3 related ones.
Though they mentioned 1 case was complicated by possible myocarditis.
Yes, potential heart inflammation. We'll come back to that in the discussion. It adds a layer of complexity.
Okay. What about the structural predictions? What do the computer models suggest the variants would do?
They predicted significant disruption. Either the variants would lead to a shortened, incomplete protein because of early stop signals.
Truncating variants.
Right. Or they changed specific amino acids in really critical spots, particularly around where CAMP is thought to bind, or areas needed for the protein to maintain its correct shape.
And did these bad variants cluster somewhere specific?
Yes, the disease-associated variants were found clustered in these functionally important regions, while harmless variants found in the general population tended to be located elsewhere on the protein. More evidence they hit critical functions.
Makes sense. Now, the lab results, the patch clamp, did it confirm the functional defect?
It did, directly. As expected, normal POPDC2 boosted the TREK1 channel current. But the mutant POPDC2 variants they tested, they completely failed to do that.
No boost at all.
No boost. The current looked the same as if TREK1 was there by itself or with just an empty control. So functionally, the mutants were like, they weren't even there, at least for this TREK1 interaction.
And the check on sodium channels?
No effects seen there. Neither normal nor mutant POPDC2 seem to impact the main cardiac sodium channel, NaV1.5.
Okay, so the mutants don't modulate TREK1. Now, the computer simulations, putting that TREK1 deficit into the heart cell models, did it predict the slow heart rate seen in patients?
This is where it got really interesting and puzzling. Based on the lab finding less TYRK1 current with the mutant POPDC2, they expected the sinus node simulation to show slowing down, right? Bradycardia.
Because TRK1 lets potassium out, which usually slows firing.
That's the usual thinking. But the simulation did the opposite. Reducing TRK1 current in their model actually made the simulated pacemaker cells fire faster, not slower.
Faster. That's completely counterintuitive.
It absolutely is. And the effects in the atrial cell model were also pretty small. It clearly suggests the link between POPDC2, TRK1, and bradycardia in actual humans is more complicated than just this one channel effect in isolation.
Okay, what about the muscle biopsy again? Even without clear dystrophy, what did they find at the protein level?
So in the biopsy from one patient, even though the muscle structure looked only mildly off, when they measured the protein levels, they found a significant drop in both POPDC1 and POPDC2 protein in the cell membrane.
Ah, so the POPDC2 variant seems to destabilize the whole complex, maybe, or affect trafficking.
That's the implication. It suggests POPDC1 and POPDC2 might depend on each other for stability or getting to the right place, and the faulty PLCDC2 messes that up, leading to less protein overall, even in muscle. They also noted some ultrastructural oddities, like tubular aggregates.
Interesting. And the gene expression maps. Where are PPDC1 and POPDC2 most active together?
The spatial data from human hearts was really informative. POPDC2 itself is pretty widespread in heart muscle cells, but the highest co-expression where both POPDC1 and POPDC2 are strongly expressed together was right in the critical nodes of the conduction system.
Specifically.
The AV node, those specialized pacemaker cells within it, and the AV bundle, places directly linked to the AV block seen in patients.
And the sinus node where the bradycardia originates.
There, POPDC2 was abundant, but POPDC1 expression was much lower. So this differential pattern, high POPDC2 everywhere, but high co-expression specifically in the AV junction, really seems to align with the specific types of conduction problems observed.
That mapping seems crucial. Okay, last piece of results.
The population data, the carriers. Yes, looking at over 1 million people, they found hundreds carrying just one copy of the specific variants seen in the families. And the key finding, after correcting for multiple testing, none of these specific variants showed a statistically significant link to AV block, bradycardia, HCM, or pacemaker need in these heterozygous carriers.
So carrying one copy doesn't seem to cause the severe disease.
The data strongly points that way. They did find that if you lump together various rare POPDC2 variants in a burden test, there was a slight association with the slower heart rate across the population, but it didn't seem to translate to a clinically significant condition based on this analysis.
That's huge news for genetic counseling.
Absolutely. It provides pretty strong reassurance for heterozygous family members.
Okay, a mountain of results. How did the authors pull it all together in the discussion? What's the big picture?
They argue that all these different lines of evidence really converge strongly. You've got the consistent clinical phenotype matching the animal models, the extreme rarity of the variants in the general population, the computational predictions of damage.
The direct lab evidence that the mutant protein fails to modulate TRK1.
The gene expression patterns pinpointing POPDC12 co-expression to the affected heart regions, and the lack of disease phenotype in heterozygous carriers in large populations. Altogether, it builds a very compelling case that these biallelic POPDC2 variants cause this specific recessive cardiac syndrome.
And they differentiate it clearly from the POPDC13 syndromes.
Yes, they emphasize the lack of significant muscle disease, suggesting maybe different expression levels or interaction partners in heart versus skeletal muscle could explain why POPDC2 defects primarily manifest in the heart.
What about the mechanism? How do they grapple with that simulation paradox?
They acknowledge it head-on. They discuss the proposed mechanism involving POPDC2, TMP binding, and TRK1 modulation. But they openly state that the simulation result where reducing TRK1 current didn't cause bradycardia in the model means the simple explanation isn't the whole story.
Science being complex.
Exactly. The precise electrophysiological pathway in vivo, in a whole human heart with nervous system input and other factors, is likely more intricate. Maybe other channels or signaling pathways are involved that weren't part of the simulation, or perhaps effects on cell communication. They do reiterate, though, that they found no evidence for POPDC2 affecting sodium channels.
And the myocarditis case, how do they interpret that?
They discuss it carefully. Could the inflammation have been the sole cause? Possibly, but unlikely given all the other evidence pointing squarely at the POPDC2 variants in that individual and the others. Was it a trigger? Or maybe part of the syndrome, like a hot phase?
Hard to know for sure.
Right. But they lean towards the genetic variants being the underlying cause, consistent with the overall pattern and the strong functional data.
Okay, so for clinicians and families, what are the main takeaways?
The big one is for genetic testing. POPDC2 should now definitely be on the list of genes to check, especially in younger patients with unexplained sinus issues, AV block, and perhaps HCM. It provides a potential diagnosis where there wasn't one before.
And the carrier information is also key.
Hugely important for counseling. The population data strongly suggests heterozygous carriers of these specific variants are unlikely to develop the severe syndrome, which can alleviate a lot of anxiety for families.
Right. So wrapping things up, let's move to their conclusions. What's the final summary?
The main conclusion is stated very clearly. Biallelic loss-of-function variants in POPDC2 cause a Mendelian autosomal recessive cardiac syndrome defined by sinus node dysfunction, AV conduction defects, and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Point blank. And the key implication is improved genetic diagnosis.
Yes. They also acknowledge the study's limitations, which is good scientific practice. The number of families, 4, is still relatively small, so the full clinical spectrum might be broader, there might be other features not seen yet.
And the carrier risk.
While the data is reassuring, they note that longer-term follow-up in diverse populations is needed to be absolutely certain about the low risk for heterozygous carriers across their entire lifespan. And, of course, they reiterate that the exact mechanism linking the faulty POPDC2, TRK1, and the resulting heart problems, especially the bradycardia in HCM, still needs more work. That simulation result highlights a knowledge gap.
So the discovery is solid, but the detailed how needs more research.
Precisely. Future work should aim to better define the clinical spectrum, maybe look for subtle muscle signs over time, continue tracking carriers, and really nail down those molecular and electrical pathways. But they conclude this study provides robust evidence establishing this new genetic syndrome.
Okay. This exploration was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license.
And as the host mentioned, you can find the DOI for the paper and a link to that license in the description for this deep dive.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with is just reflecting on the power of combining these different scientific approaches, the human genetics, the computational modeling, the detailed lab work on cells, the simulations, and then zooming out to look at massive populations. It's really that synergy that allows us to piece together the causes of rare diseases, even when, as we saw here, some pieces of the puzzle, like the exact mechanism, still require further investigation.